I'm Brad Crandall, your host for Monitor 67, with a question for you. Since the manufacture of electric cars has been abandoned for so many years, why are they about to make a comeback? Well, we'll hear the answer right after we listen to the Bob Grew Generation with their version of Winchester Cathedral. Connection does big city smog have with the development of better storage batteries? Well, the answer, of course, air pollution has become such a health hazard in major cities of the U.S. that legislators are concerned. One possible solution to the problem is the electric car, which gives off no noxious exhaust gases. And one man who believes in the future of the electric car is John Hoke of Washington, D.C., and with good reason. He built one himself, and he drives it to work every day. Reporter Peter Hackus asked Mr. Hoke about his brainchild.
Mr. Hoke, as I look in here in the rear engine compartment, I see what looks like a large switch and a couple of batteries. How much voltage does it take to run it?
Well, this system basically is 36 volts.
Well, now, this car doesn't look like any I've seen before. Where did it come from?
Well, the car is basically a King Midget, which is made in a small firm in Athens, Ohio, and it's meant to be a gas car. It came with a little one-cylinder engine, and I removed that and all of the accompanying equipment and then installed my own system of electric drive.
Well, so much for the mechanics. Let's see now if your car is really as good as you say it is. Do you suppose we could take a test drive, as they say in the auto showrooms?
Well, it's easy enough. Let's just hop in.
I notice as we drive along here that there's relatively little noise. Is this a characteristic of electrics?
Yes, actually the line you hear is a chain, which I needn't use. If I had used an optimized drive system, you wouldn't hear anything.
Well, now we're going along about, 15, 20 miles an hour. How fast will the car go?
I can do about 35 miles an hour on level ground with two people in it and maintain this for about 20, 25 miles an hour in the suburban areas. And downtown, where there's a lot of stop-and-go traffic, I only get about 20 miles.
Well, now, compared to a conventional gasoline engine, how much does it cost, do you figure, to run your electric car by comparison?
Well, this car has gone through about 1,800 miles of tests now, in which I logged the data very carefully using a wattmeter. And I'm averaging about 0.69 cents a mile to operate this vehicle based on household rates, which, of course, are the most expensive.
How would you compare that to the cost of operating a gasoline car?
Well, I would rather take it pound for pound. If I were to move the same poundage as I'm moving here at the same rate of speed and what have you, it would cost me at least a penny a mile.
So you're driving for about half?
Roughly speaking, that's right.
Now, one of the things that you electric car people have always talked about is that you produce no exhaust fumes to pollute the air. Is this really an important factor?
I'm afraid it is. It's become common knowledge that smog is a health hazard now. In fact, it's reached national proportions to where the legislative bodies are beginning to pay an awful lot of attention to it. As recently as this current session of Congress, Senators Magnuson and Muskie have introduced bills relating to air pollution problems and specifically dealing with the electric automobile as a major solution to them.
Well, now, if the electric car is such a boon, as you say, why isn't it available right now?
I think part of the problem is due to the fact that the people are inclined to feel that if it doesn't do everything that the gasoline car does, it is no good, rather than recognizing that a low-performance vehicle that can't do everything a gas car can do is still of value and can do certain jobs. And that's what this vehicle is.
Well, now, one of the things that you don't have to do as you drive along the streets like this is to drive into a gasoline station like that one over there. You don't have to do that and, say, fill her up and pay for gasoline and oil and so on. What do you do to keep your car running?
Well, I have been embarrassed on occasion and drove into the family filling station, if I may refer to the place that I use my credit card the most, and instead of saying fill her up, it was plug her in. And they were awfully gentlemanly about it, considering the threat of competition, but the way I ordinarily handle it is I plan ahead. I'm going to work and coming home. That's 20 miles. That's what this car will do, so every night when I come home from work, I plug it in, and the next morning she's fully charged from my household current.
I notice you've got a long, looks like an extension cord here on the floor. Do you find yourself needing that from time to time in an emergency?
Well, I'm proud to say that in 1,700 miles, I've used it three times. Once because I had to, the other two times just because, an electric outlet has a certain magnetic attraction to a guy in my position. Because why not put the head back on the beer, as it were, so that I've got that added range?
Well, thanks very much, John Hoke, for taking Monitor along with you for a ride in your electric car. Next time you're out our way and feel a little run down, feel free to drop by and plug in a spell. This is Peter Hackison in Washington. Now back to Monitor in Radio Central.
A writer friend of mine had an electric car, but he could only get about 5 miles at any one time because that was as big an extension cord as he could find. However, more Monitor music, Vicky Carr with Until Today.
Until today, I wandered free, new hills to climb, new skies to see, just moving on my own sweet way, and that was far until. But finding you, loving you so, I promise you. I'll never
This is Monitor coming your way at 19 minutes after the hour with music, comedy, news, and sports. So stay right here. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
WNBC New York, the big voice of Big Town USA, is the sound of conversation.
Brad Crandall here with more of Monitor 67. First, Monitor Music.
It should have been you. It should have been you. Touching and seeing and being with somebody new. Only reminded me how much in love I still have with you. Starlight wrapped around her like a glove. Never was a night so warm and perfect for a lover. It should have been glorious, beautiful, tender and wonderful too. It should have been you. It should have been you. It should have been you.
It should have been you, as Jack Benny said to the Collector of Internal Revenue. Now, here's an unsolicited testimonial from the NBC Choral and Marching Society. This past Thursday, February 2nd, marked the anniversary of the founding of a proud branch of this country's military service, the Army Nurse Corps. Well, there had been nurses serving the armed services before, in the American Revolution, as a matter of fact, as well as the Civil and Spanish-American Wars, but they were civilian contract nurses and were employed by the military, but not part of it. On February 2nd, 1901, all that changed by act of Congress, and the Army Nurse Corps came into being, with all nurses entering the service on a purely volunteer basis. In honor of this occasion, we have with us as our guest this evening a very charming lady in uniform, Major Norma Ruth Small of the U.S. Army Nurse Corps. Major Small, welcome to Monitor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Crandall.
Major, what point in your life did you decide you wanted to be a nurse? Is this an early decision?
This is a very early decision. I can't remember ever wanting to be anything else but a nurse.
I see, and it worked out, which is handy.
Yes, it did, very
well. In those days when you wanted to be a nurse as a little girl, did you want to be a nurse in the military?
I never thought of the military. In fact, I never thought of the military till I was in training, and it was for financial reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I heard about the Army Student Nurse Program, and I joined up for financial reasons, and I'm very pleased I did. I had a very enjoyable career.
Well, now, you, the ribbons, the fruit salad which you're wearing, are, among other things, Vietnamese. You obviously are just back from a tour there, then.
Yes, I returned in July of 1966 from a year tour in Vietnam.
How many nurses are currently operating in the Vietnamese area, if that's not security information?
Well, I'll say we have approximately 16 hospitals in country, and there are about 30 to 40 nurses per hospital, depending on the type, whether it's a field hospital or evacuation hospital or surgical hospital.
Is the hospital organization somewhat similar then to the way it was in the past? That is, the immediate evacuation hospital, which is roughly, let's say, at regiment level, something of this kind?
No, the evacuation system is completely different in Vietnam because we have no forward line, front line, rear line. Every hospital functions in the same way. Every hospital receives casualties directly from the battlefield, and they evacuate immediately out of country.
In other words, the hospitals are immediate surgery.
Yes, all hospitals,
situation.
Even a field hospital, which would normally be found in your rear zone areas of a normal battle situation, they are frontline hospitals in Vietnam.
Yeah, there's been some pretty fantastic results. I know the percentages on death after wound, that is, if you don't die immediately from the wound, the possibility of your surviving is now something like 100 to 1.
Yes, it's down to 1%. In Korea, it was 3%, and in World War II, it was 4%. So we've done a remarkable thing in lowering it there.
Is the Army Nurse Corps still an entirely volunteer organization?
No, it isn't. We are now drafting male nurses due to our critical shortage of nursing.
Mm-hmm. Can a male nurse be commissioned?
Yes, a male nurse has been commissioned now since 1956. And they have equal rank and opportunities. They're even in the regular army now.
You mentioned a little earlier the business of the number of hospitals inside the country. Are there any new types of equipment, new developments coming out in usage for Vietnam?
Yes, we recently sent our MUST hospital, which stands for Mobile Unit Self-Contained Transportable. It can be transported by a truck or a helicopter. It can be dropped from the underside of a helicopter and within 20 minutes can be assembled. They put air compressors on this balloon-type affair,
mm-hmm.
and we'll have 20-bed wards, a full operating room suite with the central material supply, completely air-conditioned.
And filtered air.
Filtered air, everything is just ideal for a hospital.
Well, now, there's a good deal of conversation about drafting doctors, although these are all men. Do you consider that there's a possibility that it may be necessary to draft female nurses?
I rather doubt if they'll draft the female nurses because nurses have basically been very patriotic. At the height of World War II, we had 57,000 nurses in uniform. These were females. And they responded voluntarily to the call. And they are responding to Vietnam. In Vietnam now, practically all are volunteers. Of course, this leaves a big gap in our stateside hospital, so we are acutely short of nurses.
Mm-hmm.
But they do respond, and I think we will be able to do it without a draft.
Major, thank you very much for being with us this evening on Monitor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Crandall.
On the occasion of the 66th anniversary of the founding of the Army Nurse Corps, we've been talking with Major Norma Ruth Small of the United States Army Nurse Corps. And again, Monitor music from a gentleman with the unlikely name of Ennio Morricone. The song, Titoli. Titoli, which does not mean teetotaler in Italian, and that's the sort of thing you'll learn only on Monitor, your weekend companion for the best and easy listening, no matter where you are, at home or in your car, anywhere around the USA. In northeastern Pennsylvania, our friends hear us on WSCR in Scranton, the city selected for the world's first biddy basketball championship for boys from 8 to 12. Now, a word from our NBC stations all around the country, then more of Monitor 67.
Monitor finals on the Bob Hope Desert Golf Classic, shortly on the NBC Radio Network.
This is Monitor 67, and I'm your host, Brad Crandall. Just ahead, a live pickup from the Bob Hope Desert Classic Golf Tournament in Palm Springs, California. First, the arbors let a little fresh air in with Open a New Window.
Open a new window, open a new door. Travel a new highway that's never been tried before. Before you find your adult fellow punching the same clock, walking the same tightrope as everyone on the block. The value you want to be is three-dimensional. Soaking up light down to your toes. Whenever they say slightly unconventional, just put your thumb up to your nose and show them how to dance to a new rhythm, whistle a new song, go through the new vintage, the fizz doesn't last too long. There's only one way to make the bubble stay, simply travel a new highway. Soaking up life down to his toes. Whatever they say is slightly unconventional. Just put your thumb onto your nose and show them how to to dance to a new rhythm, whistle a new song, toast with a new vintage, the fizz of your last too long. There's only one way to make the bubbles stay. Simply travel a new highway, dance to a new rhythm, open a new window every day. Open a new window every day.
Now, Monitor presents the Bob Hope Desert Classic, brought to you by Chrysler Corporation, where quality is engineered into every car. For our final report of the weekend on the 8th annual Bob Hope Desert Classic Golf Tournament, we pause briefly and then switch to Joe Garagiola and Frank Dill at the La Quinta Country Club in Palm Springs, California.
Thank you, Brad. This is Joe Garagiola, and I'll be back with a wrap-up of the Bob Hope Desert Classic after this from Plymouth.
Did you hear about it? You haven't heard about it? Well, come on, get with it. It's your Plymouth dealer's first annual Win You Over sale. He's offering a specially equipped Plymouth at a very special price. Did you hear about it? Now you have.
And you heard it from Edie Gourmet. During Plymouth's big Win You Over sale, you'll find winning deals on all 67 Furies, Belvederes, Valiants, Barracudas, and the Belvedere Silver Special. Standard equipment includes a long list of extras, all at a reduced price. Drive it now during your Plymouth dealer's Win You Over sale.
Plymouth is out to win you over this year. Follow your heart to your Plymouth dealer today.
Now that you've heard about it, get with it. Get on over to your nearest Plymouth dealer. Get a real winner of a deal during Plymouth's first annual Win You Over sale today.
Seconds after the tournament ended, I was on the 18th green talking to Bob Hope and the winner, Tom Neaporty. Bob, congratulations. A tremendous finish, a tremendous tournament.
I guess they all told about where all the money goes for this, to all these charities and the Eisenhower Clinic, I guess the medical center. Now, we're sure, as I said before, we're sure indebted to all these guys. And we're kind of thrilled about Tom Neaporty here knocking this thing off, you know, and taking away that new Chrysler and everything. It's really, really great victory and a great day.
Tom, it was a tremendous thrill. You made quite a speech. Tell us about this 18th hole once again.
Well, Joe, I'd like to say first, it's probably the biggest thrill of my life right now, because I guess winning the National Air Collegiate was a big thrill, but I know that this is a great thrill for me. And coming to the last hole, I know Doug and I were both tied, and I hit my forward off the tee and kept my drive to the right of the fairway, and hit a 9-iron into the green and was lucky and sunk the putt.
You want to say hello to your wife, who may not have seen it but might be listening?
Oh, I sure do. I sure like to say hello, honey, and to all the children, Joey and Joe and Nip and Penny and Jay and Molly and Polly.
That's a team. The Rams could use them. Hey, do you know that the great thing about a big piece in the paper out here in the Times or the Examiner about Tom being a club pro? And this is a great event for a club pro to win this. Isn't that true,
That's
Tom?
That's right, sure.
Where do you work down at? The Piping Rock?
On the Piping Rock, yeah, in Long Island,
and,
New York.
And, you know, when they say a club pro comes out to win this against all these other cats, you know, these touring pros, it's really something.
It is. And once again, Tom, we congratulate you for winning. And Bob, we congratulate you on a great weather and a great tournament.
Tom, to the practice tee, I want to let.
Okay.
And now for a final wrap up of the scores, here's a fellow who's done an outstanding job throughout the weekend, and I've certainly enjoyed working with him, Frank Dill.
Thank you, Joe. And as you told everybody, our winner, Tom Neaporty, with a fine 69 in the final round today at La Quinta Country Club, finishing 11 under par for the tournament with five consecutive rounds of scores of 76 the first day, then 68, 68, 68, and a final day 69. Fantastic over the last 4 days. Second place, the defending champion going into this tournament this year in Palm Springs, Doug Sanders, who finished 10 under par for the 90 holes of play, with a 71 today. In third place, at 6 under par for the 90 holes, Chichi Rodriguez. Then followed at 5 under by Paul Harney, Jack Nicklaus, Bert Yancey, and George Archer. At 4 under, Billy Casper, Dale Douglas, and Bob Charles. 3 under, George Knutson, Gene Littler, Joe Campbell, and Frank Boynton. Frank had a disappointing day today. After his fine 65 of yesterday at Bermuda Dunes, Frank Boynton had a 76 today. At 2 under, Lionel Hebert and Gardner Dickinson. At 1 under, Tommy Aaron, Bert Weaver, Charles Cootie, Dave Moore, and Bob Goldie. Arnold Palmer finishing 2 over for the tournament and a 73 today. Our producer has been Mike Button, technical director John Cameron. This is Frank Dill speaking, and now here's Joe with a word for Plymouth.
Plymouth is out to win you over with specially reduced prices on specially equipped Plymouths. It's your Plymouth dealer's first annual Win You Over sale. Take the beautiful Belvedere Silver Special, for example. It comes with an all-vinyl interior, deluxe wheel covers, white sidewalls, special trim, custom paint stripes, even a textured vinyl roof. All at a real winner of a price tag. Save on all new Plymouths now during the big Win You Over sale at your Plymouth dealer. And now for Frank Dillon and myself, this is goodbye from the Bob Hope Desert Classic. And now after a short pause, we return you to Radio Central in New York. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
And our thanks to you both, Joe Garagiola and Frank Dill, for a fine job throughout the weekend. The Bob Hope Desert Classic has been brought to you by Chrysler Corporation, where quality is engineered into every car. Now, more Monitor music. In answer to the age-old question, who put the lipstick on Mrs. Murphy's calendar? Here's Jane Morgan with Kiss Tomorrow. Goodbye.
Goodbye, my love. I know we're through. Tonight will be my last with you. Don't say a word. Don't even try. It's best that we kiss. Tomorrow, goodbye.
Now, for those of you who remember a message better when it's accompanied by a melody, here's the name of our show, All Set to Music.
Monitor Radio. We depend on it.
Stay right with us here on Monitor, where we'll be hearing shortly from comedian Sandy Barron as he impersonates a confused high school student just on the other side of the Monitor beacon. Now, Monitor on stage. Star performances recorded live in leading nightclubs, theaters, and concert halls all around the country. If you were in grade school when I was, you probably never were exposed to progressive education. And even if you were, I'm sure it really wasn't much like what comedian Sandy Barron portrays in this sketch, where he plays a student being interviewed by the guidance counselor.
Come in, Sandy. Sit down, sit down.
Thank you, sir.
Don't cross your legs. How's everything going, Sandy?
I would say pretty well, sir. Thank you, pretty well.
Not quite as well as you might expect, young fella. Mr. Terhune, your homeroom teacher, and myself have been looking over your battery tests and your SITs, and frankly, we're a little bit disappointed.
I'm sorry to...
Don't talk until I finish. frankly, we thought that you'd be doing a heck of a lot better than you are by now.
Yes.
You got certain problems?
Problems. Sir, I'm very glad that you brought that up, because I might have been embarrassed in your presence to do that. But the fact that you mentioned it makes me feel free.
Get on with it.
Yes. Yes, sir, yes. The problem basically is, if I may say so, is that I am not happy with my schedule, sir. I am not happy in cooking. And I do not care at all for typing and shorthand. I just don't like them in any way.
Well, Sandy, I suppose all of us have tasks at one time in our life or other that don't make us completely happy.
Yes, I know.
Besides, we're here to discuss your future, not your happiness. They are indeed two different things.
Yes, sir.
Now, Sandy, everything in life... Uncross your legs. Everything in life... Everything in life is a means to an end, so to speak.
Yeah,
Now, what are your particular goals?
Well, I would say that at this point in my human development, as a functioning human who is developing, I am not that certain of what one might call one's final goals. Mm-hmm. But I know I don't want to be a Girl Friday. I know that.
Now, Sandy, I'm glad we were able to sit down man-to-man and thrash this out, because I don't like to keep you late after class.
Well, it is near midnight, sir. And my folks are expecting me home for dinner, that's all.
I've missed a good number of dinners myself, young fellow.
I know you have, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's one of the things we talk about. If you're ever in trouble, go to him, because he understands. He's on your side.
Yes, I do, Sandy.
Yes, you do. You certainly do, sir.
I try to understand you,
Sandy. I know you do.
Do you appreciate the fact that I try to understand you?
Yes, sir.
Why don't you tell me that
I appreciate the fact...
Well, let me hear it, Sandy.
I thank you for helping.
All right. Now, what steps are you going to take to try to remedy this faulty attitude of yours?
I'll make you a casserole.
Sandy Barron and a slightly cynical look at modern educational methods. Now Don Ho, the barefoot balladeer from Honolulu, with monitor music. Tiny Bubbles.
Make me happy.
Make me feel fine. Tiny Bubbles. Make me warm. Silver sea, and mostly here's a toast to you and me. Tiny bubbles,
tiny bubbles
in the wine,
make me happy.
Monitor presents Sport of Speed,
Each week at this time, Ted Webb brings you news, views, and results from the world of auto racing to keep you informed about one of the biggest of all spectator sports. Here's Ted with today's report.
Thank you, Brad. The second annual 24-hour Continental Sports Racing Car Classic here at the Daytona Florida International Speedway ended in a sweeping victory for the Prancing Horse from Modena, Italy. Ferrari swept the event almost from the start to finish. They took the lead after 350 miles when the Jim Hall Chaparral, which Phil Hill had put into the lead, had been retired. Ferrari led from that point in. In the winning car, when it crossed the line, was our friend from down under, Chris Amon from New Zealand. He was the driving partner of Lorenzo Bandini, one of the great drivers from Italy. They were driving a P4 12-cylinder 4-liter prototype, which was just built so that Enzo Ferrari could again challenge Ford for the World Championship Manufacturer's Honors. Chris Amon, congratulations. Did you have any uneasy moments during the entire 24-hour race?
No, not really. The car ran very, very well. We had no problems with that. It was a little bit difficult during the night. There were a lot of cars in the race, and some of them were a great deal slower than we were, so we were continually lapping cars. These were the only real problems.
Chris, yeah, I know you're not familiar to the 31-degree banks, which make up part of the 3.81-mile road track course. Did the sweeping banks, as you came off the infield road course, bother you at all, particularly at night?
No, not really. One way they do alter things a little bit is that you have to set the car up mainly for the banking, and in this respect, you sacrifice a bit of road holding on the infield.
Did you have any moment of worry about the way the Ferrari team cars were going to hold up? Were there any moments when you thought, uh-oh, this might be it?
No, the car never missed a beat during the race. It was one of the most comfortable races I've ever had.
Chris, I might ask you what your plans are from now on in, perhaps unformulated at this moment, but we hope to see you at Sebring for the 12 hours there on the 1st of April, and if you come over with your cohorts of drivers and the mechanics, we're very happy to have you.
Thank you. This depends a little on what Mr. Ferrari is planning. I will be with Ferrari for the rest of the year. This was my first race with them, and naturally I'm very happy to have won it. I don't think anything has been decided on Sebring as yet.
Congratulations, and thank you very much, Chris Amon, for coming to our microphone. Finishing in second position was another prototype Ferrari driven by Ludovico Scarfiotti and Mike Parks of England. Finishing third, and then still another Ferrari, Pedro Rodriguez from Mexico and Jean Guichet from France. Then came a prototype factory Porsche under 2 liters, first in that class, with Hans Hermann of Stuttgart and Joe Sippert of Switzerland. And that wraps it up right now. The 24-hour race took 666 laps around this combined course for a total of 2,537.46 100-mile miles, an average speed of 105.7 miles an hour. This is Ted Webb from Daytona for Monitor Sports.
Sport of Speed, featuring Ted Webb, America's foremost authority on auto racing, is presented each Saturday and Sunday, coast to coast, on NBC Monitor. Now, a message from your heart fund. In the midst of the greatest abundance this country has ever known, Americans are faced with a baffling health problem, heart and circulatory disease. You can help your Heart Association fight this number one killer by supporting your heart fund. What you give is a personal investment in the kind of medical research that will eventually bring heart and circulatory diseases under control. Bigger dividends in prevention and treatment depend on you. So please, be as generous as you can in supporting your heart fund. Give, so more will live. That's Klaus Ogerman and his finely filtered five with Lothar's theme, and you're tuned to Monitor 67. I'm Brad Crandall, with a reminder that NBC News on the Hour is coming up, then we'll be back.
This is Barbara Walters. Merrill Muller and I are heard each weekday on Emphasis on NBC Radio.